I tried for even a glimpse of understanding. It's a new medium of sensation, she explained, the most relaxing and yet vigorous state you can imagine, so abounding in beauty and vitality. It's too wonderful for me to grasp just yet. Can't you tell me more of this new medium? Could you imagine a substance made out of spring? She replied. Not of individual fresh willows and buds and blossoms and tender greens and bursting colors, not those details. But the very sweep of an entire world decked out, the substance of spring. Don't you see how fresh, delicious, exciting, exalting it would be compared to ordinary things? I am in this superlative beauty and freshness and exquisite delicacy. It is hard to describe in clumsy terms, or name anything but just the substance of spring. 114. The road I know, which sounded pleasant and poetic. But those were the days when I was pragmatic and still somewhat skeptical. For satisfaction I wanted both reasons and results. Nevertheless I held my fire and awaited developments. Much instruction followed, whose purpose I fathomed not at all. For example, we would like you, the invisibles speaking through Betty told her, to cultivate to the utmost your instinct for beauty, form, poems, anything that has been achieved by man in his brief moments of triumph and contact with the Oversoul. It is the biggest uplifting material thing you can possess. Do not be afraid to drink deep of beauty. It is an open door through which you can glimpse what is to come, beauty, all that is harmony and in opposition to discord. Beauty is a great and quiet teacher. Detailed education is very important, but it is beset with many restrictions and pitfalls. It is a wise teacher who keeps his pupils looking at the end of the vista instead of watching their feet on the narrow path they walk. To me, sitting on the sidelines, that sounded a good deal like urging Betty to be Betty. But day after day they kept her at whatever lay behind their words. Beauty and love, they insisted. You hear us say love so often that the word ceases to convey any idea to you, but it is the all-containing, permeating essence which will unite your world to ours. We wish we had another word for it. But we see it as the first principle, the road I know, 115, of growth. Open the floodgates, let the great current of the universe pour through you to others, if you would live. 3. Much of Betty's instruction was given in this mood of poetic imagery. Again the invisibles would express themselves in what seemed to me more practical terms. Don't try for anything, said they on one occasion, but just the feeling of a substance as physically permeating as ether or gas or something like that. Try simply, in relaxing, to feel that this substance permeates every inch of your body. Accustom yourself to the feel of it. You will find it will rest you and bring happiness even in the very beginning. You have tried it before, but this will visualize it. Do it at any time, momentarily. It's an actual fact, this inlet of strength. There was a pause, evidently for experiment. Anybody could do it, said Betty presently. It is a matter of fact law. I don't see anything psychic about it. I am just studying the law, and little by little I am demonstrating it. The biggest thing you can study is this permeating strength, and how much of it you can take. I lie here and strive according to the poor little rules I have discovered already, and something like a slight chemical change takes place that makes me, 116, the road I know, aware of my own possibility. I am just a poor feeble beginner, but I can see so much ahead. Here are the only tasks we give you now, concluded the invisibles. First, love. Attract unselfishly. Second, as we told you before, walk through your days as a creature with folded wings, conscious of the possession of another element and of your ability to enter it. Third, weave enough in spirit to invite inspiration, and act promptly without questioning on what comes to you. For a while Betty seemed to be considering this. Then she said, I feel like Columbus after weeks and weeks of travel, holding fast to the faith that it's there on the other side. I mustn't relax that faith. 4. Betty's faith was not ill-founded. But also its fulfillment was not immediate. Other things in her makeup delayed matters for a time. Notably caution. Betty was far from being credulous or an easy mark. Her long line of Scotch ancestors had given her a certain hard-headed skepticism. At the time it seemed to me a mighty useful trait in this kind of a job. It still does. But also its use could be overdone. The Invisibles pointed this out. "Don't be afraid to accept your dreamland," they advised her. "You have enough ingrained practical, the road I know, 117 habits to bring you back to balance whenever necessary, but unless you let go your present control you will never be able to do our work. The fact that you have that control is your greatest asset. If you can turn it off at will and control it. Do you see what we are doing? Step by step we are trying to break the bonds which take you down to your earthly village and help you to enter the wider world we live in. Yes, it is like getting you off sticky flypaper. You want to do it, but you must conquer your bodily instincts and habits first. You have the imagination and control, but the abandon must be acquired." Betty must have been able to obey orders, for shortly she reported, "I'm being taken along with some strong ones. Their association invigorates me so. I am going through some kind of an experience on a higher level. Before, I was like a little skinny chickabiddy thing that refused to come out of its shell, crouched in its little shell because that was all it knew that was comfortable. Now someone is helping me to step bravely out and I am feeling strong and sure, and not regretting the sacrifice of my shell. You can have little conception now of the intense happiness toward which you are progressing," the Invisibles encouraged her. "We don't want to entice you with statements that, misconceived, would endanger a simple approach to the reality. But no inner, 118, the road I know, vision must ever have a wall instead of a horizon." For some little time Betty was silent. Then she announced, "I've always before stuck my head up through a hatchway and tried to look around, but now I've climbed up. I'm all here but I don't know what to do." She chuckled. "This is a great game, I tell you what. Like a fairy story. My, but this is the life." Again she was silent. "Well, I've got to do something about it now. I can't just stand and say how nice it is. All the old ideas and sensations underfoot, as though I had taken off my clothes and were standing on them ready to swim. But what'll I do?" "Never mind," said the Invisibles, "just go on." "You must have brought me here for some reason," Betty insisted. "What is it?" "I'm listening." Once more the interval of silence. Then she laughed. "Supposing," she began, "just supposing you suddenly found yourself free as air, released into the bigness of the solar system as compared with the Earth. Supposing you were just jumping with energy and eagerness and enthusiasm, and the only danger seemed to be spreading out too wide and maybe dissolving yourself. And if you had no plan about what you'd accomplish with all that bursting energy, that's just my trouble now. Generally people make plans first. The road I know, 119, then, when the plan is big enough, energy is meted out. But here I am, all dressed up in energy, and no place to go. I don't know what to do first. It's too big. My inwardness isn't big enough for it. I want to give it to you, lots of it. Maybe that's the reason it is given to me." She contemplated this for a moment. "If I could only thicken it up a little," she mused, "so you could use it." There was a short pause. Then, "Sadly, I can't thicken it up enough. The general trend is toward a more spiritual life," hinted the Invisibles. "All right, I put in my oar, what is spiritual?" "It is just daily life carried on by a self with higher associations," was the answer. "That daily life can either go on growing, or be dwarfed and stand still. When it is dwarfed, you are not conscious of it, just as you are not conscious of an atrophied organ. When it begins to grow it takes possession of you and pushes other things aside. You'll see the point, in time," said the Invisibles, addressing Betty. "All you can do at present is to embody, in your daily life, your aspiration and kinship with the stars. Above all be patient. Go about your affairs and do not expect us unless we manifest. We are lifting you. Play and laugh and love and work to rise. Cannot you feel even now that you have set a little, 120, the road I know, harder task for yourself and that you can see a little farther?" In other words, she must first absorb the concept, whatever it was, and then understand it. But understanding, in an Invisible's definition, seemed to be something more than mere mental appraisal and judgment. It was a kind of incorporation into the substance of one's self. The Invisibles called this "make it so," borrowing the phrase by which a Navy officer makes official a happening aboard ship. You must not only understand it, but you must make it so before it is your possession. The Invisibles summed it up. Chapter 10 Inheriting the Law 1. Many different primary phases were mixed in with the first development of the idea of contact. In addition to the inner citadel, there were, for example, such things as insulation, elimination of undesirables, and a half dozen other technicalities fully treated in the Betty book, but out of place here. That is what I meant when I said that to me at this time the instruction seemed fragmentary. As far as I was concerned, the lack of sequence was maddening. The Invisibles would bring up a brand new topic of instruction or discussion, would get my interest just nicely started on it, and then drop it in favor of something entirely different. They gave things in dabs. Sometimes they had four or five subjects going at once. Talk about keeping track of a three-ring circus. I have, or had then, a tidy mind. Why don't you finish a thing once you've begun it? I complained, instead of romping around like the giddy goat. I got no exact answer at the time, but I had ceased expecting exact answers to that type of question. To answer would have been, I suppose, to defeat the very 121, 122, the road I know, purpose of the indirection. In other words, arousing too directly the interest of Betty's subconscious mind would have resulted in what we called coloring, which means that the said subconscious would take over, more or less, and inject its own ideas. In the early stages of Betty's training, this had to be carefully guarded against. After about 5 years, however, such precaution was no longer necessary. Betty herself had command, and the sub had not a look in. Then, to my satisfaction, the little dab method was abandoned. That was one answer to my question. There was another. But the Invisibles gave it only after Betty had gone beyond the need for that technique. For purposes of study, there is over-magnification of a part, they now told me. To avoid misshapement, there must be occasional pauses to contemplate this magnified part in relation to the whole. That is, the part must be shoved back and diminished to its proper relationship. The constant changing of subject to which you have always objected is the only method we could devise of accomplishing this purpose. It allowed the picture to retire to its proper proportions. That satisfied my mind. An unusual concession on the part of the Invisibles. For a long time they seemed to have almost a contempt for intellect. That proved not to be really so. Merely, for the moment, the intellect was not the appropriate tool, and moreover, as a usual thing, in our ordinary processes, we use the intellect, the road I know, 123, almost exclusively, forgetting the non-intellectual, shall I say intuitional, equipment which now the Invisibles wished to bring up to correct balance. But, as usual, they did not explain this until the fact was accomplished, and that one thing came nearer throwing me off the whole business than anything else. My life had been one that required a very active use of the intellect. And if my mind could not endorse a thing, then it was out, as far as I was concerned. Now, apparently, I was being asked to accept things without that endorsement. I say apparently, for later I found out this was not at all what they were asking. I understood, finally, that I was not to set aside intellectual judgments, but merely to postpone them until the accomplished fact. Then I could use my mind as critically as I pleased. Indeed, the Invisibles wanted me to do so. The whole thing boiled down to one simple statement: the brain is the executive, not the originating, branch of our personal government. Why did they not tell me this, in so many words, right at the start? I did not know, and I was annoyed. But that was not the Invisibles' way of doing things. They never told us until after we had experienced. Evidently we were supposed, as the cowboys express it, to roll our own. There is no substance at all in pure intellect. The Invisibles answered one of my protests. It is just a very, 124 the road I know fine shadow. The simplest achievement is so much more important. Pure intellect is aloof, unrelated. from her vantage point in the other consciousness. Betty accepted this more readily than did I. "There's such a great difference between your brain and mine," she told me. "Yours is a much better human faculty, so much stronger." But she added, "I can't see why it's so much less absorbent than mine. I don't understand that. It's very puzzling to me, very puzzling. I don't see why brainless instincts like mine are so much easier." Neither could I. And even the invisibles refused help. "They've gone and left me to puzzle this out," said Betty. "I admire brain so much. I don't understand. It looks like some non-conducting quality, a sort of gloss, like glass. There's something." She broke off for a moment, as if listening. "Where's the catch?" she ventured. Again the listening pause. "Oh, I see. Looks like a ship running with a very strong starboard light and almost no port light. It's a one-eyed thing. It's the other eye they're trying to develop in me." She studied this a few moments. "I am getting to understand it a little now," she concluded. "The brain looks like a petty officer. Whatever it is incapable of handling, it denies. Through generations, the road I know, 125, of denial, it has arrested the development of the wiser inner self, which is adapted to handling the higher world of senses and possibilities, the vitalized world around us, what lies outside human set limitations. They are not really limitations except as we cramp that inner self." Betty seemed satisfied. I was not. I wanted to see, with the practical eyes of my mind, where I was planting my feet. The invisibles were patient. "Make the leap," they urged, "dare to do it. Take a chance on our being right. You cannot connect up in an unbroken series of steps with what you know. This reality is not on the outskirts, a gap must be bridged. It is very necessary to employ the measuring stick of your mind ordinarily, but lay it aside intermittently. Hurl yourself into space, as it were. It will not hurt you to go bravely out to pick up a clue or two. You've been trying to creep up on things on the scientific side, but they've got to be boldly taken, artistically, in the present case." "I see what they want," cried Betty. "Supposing you had to prepare a turtle to become a lark. I'm showing you how to break up the inertia. This leaping, hurling business, this releasing, whatever you want to call it, is definitely the only way to take possession of the wider, freer life." All of which, to me, at that time, tended dangerously near to conventional metaphysical fuzziness, and that, 126, the road I know, was something I did not approve at all. I was very difficult at that period, and if I seem to be doing a lot of talking about myself, it is only because I believe my first view was that of the hard-headed, practical, average man in the street. The phrase "insult to one's intelligence" occurred to me. "Don't be offended in your intellect," the invisibles told me. "Give us a chance. Your precious intellect will have its innings. We won't do more harm than present it something to work on for the rest of its natural life. Leave it in soak and keep it flexible, and we can go on. It's bound to be satisfied later. When this other faculty becomes the leader, your intellect must immediately react to it. It must, just as the blood goes through your body to nourish all parts. Do you get the idea, now? Something beyond what you can understand, can explain with the brain? If that is what we want to get to you first, how could we get it through your brain without the slowest of evolution?" As a statement that made sense. Please note, they pressed home their point, you will not get scientific explanation such as you expect. You will get the reality as we can manage to give it, which you can deduce as theory later. We cannot tell you in words which would convey anything to you, what we must accomplish by molding you to the thing itself. The road I know, 127. The molding, it proved, had a definite and ordered method. Betty was much amused at the process. "It's like children dressing up and playing lady," she commented. "I'm pretending I'm what I'd like to be. It's absurdly dignified." She laughed heartily. "You ought to see me. It's the way I feet when I wear a train. It all still looked fuzzy to me, and I said so. Couldn't you just take it on faith?" they urged. "Couldn't you just pretend for a 9, to give it a chance to work? If this reality is ever to be recognized, It must be by something hitherto unrecognized in law. Put your energy and your daring into throwing out to your farthest limits in search of comprehension of the hitherto unknown. You must gain it in imagination first, and then work back through slow steps to connect it with observed facts. And there I was stopped again. By a word. Imagination. I am a fiction writer and I know something about imagination and its power to conjure elaborate structure out of thin air. Also it hook in folk, such as wish fulfillment and compensation fantasies. Even Betty was doubtful. I don't think, she objected, that's a very good word, imagination. It's too cobwebby with unrealities. 128, the road I know. The invisibles seemed openly astonished. Imagination. They cried. Why, that is the very gateway of reality. You call it a plaything, you've always called it a plaything. But actually it's the one thing you possess that connects you with the next substance. It's a transmuting chemical. It's been the father of a big brood of mistaken ideas, I grumbled. Nevertheless, they insisted, it's the way to get outside yourself. How else could you function beyond your fleshly limitations? But use imagination masterfully, not as an onlooker, as a partaker. The whole trouble, they added, astoundingly, is in using too little. A little imagination has no strength to fight. Instead of freeing, it is captured, a poor little helpless thing. A little, taken and concentrated on, shut off from its source of supply, is devitalized, dead. They had made one convert. One must try harder to get hold of the idea and play with it in symbols, agreed Betty enthusiastically. You've got actually to be, in imagination, dripping big-leaved plants in the sun against the blue sky. You've actually got to breathe that idea in before you can make it work, because you are not working in our accustomed substance, you are working in a higher creative form that you don't know how to use, except unconsciously and as it were, relaxedly. When you get to a certain age and dignity, you don't play that way. You, the road I know, 129, should. I'm not at all impressed by any age or dignity. I am just impressed with actual things and the necessity for them. Whatever my doubts, Betty was completely sold on the idea. I want to go on where it is free under the law, she continued. I want to go on and be more and more the inheritor of these influences. That's it. I want to inherit the law. As soon as you become clean-souled and free-spirited, you inherit the law, and that law is a kind of evolution structure. It is what carries you on beyond little man-made experiments. They are so pokey. 2. No discussion of process would be complete were I to omit the exuberant joyousness of the whole performance. This was in no degree damped by the hard and serious work. There was plenty of that. But never did the invisibles permit it to become portentous or overpowering. Nevertheless, it cannot be denied that ordinarily revelation has a certain drag to it. Saints and holy men are proverbially grim and uncompromising. Betty's invisibles were careful to avoid this. And Betty herself was by nature such a gay and chuckly person that she reacted wholesomely against any inadvertent overstress. For the idea of asceticism they bade nothing but, 130, the road I know, scorn. Giving up a thing, anything, instead of using it in its proper proportion is merely an indication, as Betty herself had always maintained, that you're afraid of it. Funny diets, abstinences of any kind, strict physical regimens, all that sort of thing, were definitely out. No negations of any kind interact favorably on the higher centers, said they. That sounds like a dangerous doctrine, but in reality the danger is more apartment to occur on the side of damaging the spontaneity of the body's functions, its buoyancy and equilibrium and youthful confidence and carelessness. Only too easily the aspirations of the inner life misinterpret themselves into such restrictions as an over-regulated child would suffer. Nor would the invisibles permit either of us to tangle ourselves up in the conventional ideas of service, duty, willpower. It's not willpower at all. They protested. Everything gets so stiff and painful when you do it from the willpower side. Get at it more from the spirit power, the desire power side. There's a lift to happiness and harmony which is so much easier than this painful willpower method. This other is like the hard work you do in play. It's glowing, quickening, a life-begetting thing. Betty considered this. Work ... production, she ruminated. Work is the road I know. 131, painful, production is better. What can I get that is self-acting? Creation is the nearest to it. That is a cleaner, brighter word. People do not create under a lash. Above all, said the Invisibles, don't forget the importance of joyousness through all work. That's the big thing. Think more about that. There is no excuse for dreariness. Dreariness is just contraction. You must never do things merely from a sense of duty or service, said they. You must do them because you want to do them. And you'll want to do them when you've developed full consciousness. Better not to do them at all otherwise. And, they added astonishingly, you can give to others effectively only from overflow. Duty and willpower has no momentum. What they called automatic quickening carries far. And that accompanies only a real desire, and a real enjoyment in the game. Keep your attention on savoring, joyously absorbing what you get with the effort, they advised. So few people are acquisitive enough, so few absorb all they could after they have made the effort. They take only in proportion to what they spend, when there is so much more to be had with a little more effort on the joyous side instead of the struggle side. Oh! Cried Betty delightedly, I've been given an attribute of bouncing. We don't any of us bounce high enough. Not enough recoil. If we want to be far flung in happiness, we must think more about the end and, 132, the road I know, less about the effort. We are too near-sighted, we look too much for what is in clear focus. We should look more to the ultimate reward. She checked herself. Then with a comic effort at dignity, that is a very nice sway idea. It swells me nicely. The way to free yourself, concluded the Invisibles, is by expansion of the heart. It is the only possible instrument for shaping your destiny. Without it, the rest is struggle and suffering and delay. With it, all is an open door. 3. This moving forward blindly in a fog, so to speak, had its clear spots of summary. Every so often, when Betty had advanced to a certain completed phase, she was presented with a blueprint of the ground over which she had passed. Sometimes this was cast in a formula, but accompanied always with a warning that it was no hard and fast rule, but only a summary of progress. Here is an example, given in early days, in 1920. 1. The relaxation of the body. 2. The inflowing of the living waters of the spirit. 3. In order not to be swept away by them, the making of stability, which had been symbolized by Betty as her shaft. See the Betty book, The Road I Know, 133, 4. The exertion of willpower just to overcome the deadlift, the effort then to climb out, the pushing against the strong current. Then you are ready to start. 5. The putting on of blinders against the earth mind, and thinking with the heart. That is the first outgoing, all the rest has been incoming. 6. The feeling of union with all created things, the expansion sideways supplementing the upward. At the time this was given, Betty's experiments were still confined to more or less formal sessions under definite control. But now she glimpsed a different possibility. That accomplishes a definite something, as a provisional formula, she commented on the above. However, I think it can be used, not only in this trance state, but in everyday life. It can be used in the life we live, without a bandage over the eyes. It would become then as inspiration, a long breath. Chapter 11 Leaving the Body 1. Undoubtedly when entering the higher consciousness, Betty had from the very beginning left the body, without appreciating the fact. As soon as she realized that she was actually so doing, the Invisibles began to teach her how to do it consciously. Escape from the restrictions of the body, said they. And life outside the restrictions of the body, even while you are occupying it, can be experienced. That is the real life. How can any sensible person doubt it? We are trying to shatter the bodily conception of life in order to expose the other to view. The discovery of this other conception and the gradual acquisition of it is what constitutes the raison d'etre of your existence. If you do not discover it, you have failed, You are either standing still or slipping back. Most of the training to accomplish this was technical, intended for Betty individually, and in no sense to be taken as general instruction.